morning, family. My name is Tony V. I'm an addict. Man, the energy in here is fire. A lot of gratitude in this room, and you could feel it. A little forewarning about me, if you haven't heard me before, like I'm a big crybaby. Okay? And I make no apologies for it, and I'll talk about that a little bit. So if you're in the first row, you're in the splash zone. I'm going to jump around a little bit. I'm going to start by saying I had been clean for a little while. In early years in recovery, and by early years, I mean 3 to 5, right? And 3 to 5, if you haven't been, if you're new to Narcotics Anonymous and you're at that stage, what I was grateful for was my predecessors, specifically a gentleman by the name of John Grigsby. God rest his beautiful soul. I say his last name because he's deceased. I hope that's okay. If it's not, nobody's checked me on it yet, but if it is, please, by all means, if I'm breaking any traditions, I do not want to be that guy, okay? I have nothing but love and respect for my predecessors. And I was sharing at a meeting in my home group, and the tears came. And the tears, when I share, they're not from sadness, and they're not from self-pity, and it's not that whiny bullshit that I did in my disease, you know? It's from a genuine sense of gratitude that I learned here. And after the meeting, he cornered me and he goes, "Man, when are you gonna stop doing that?" And I said, "Stop doing what?" He's like, "That, with the crying." And I said, "Oh yeah, I'm sorry." And he goes, "No, that. When are you gonna stop trying to customize how God made you stuck, just the way you are?" And in that moment, that man gave me a freedom I'd never experienced, a freedom to be myself, and it allowed me to carry on through this process to find solution after solution after solution after solution. Because I don't know about you guys, like January 12th, this past Monday, I celebrated 31 years. And I still feel like I'm a miracle. What's up, Jimmy? And what a gift that is. Because what one of my predecessors taught me is, it's very difficult for the disease to get in when you're in a straight up state of gratitude. You know? Like, that is such a key. And when I got here, I didn't know what that was like. I had no idea. You know, I was adopted at a very young age. And I was adopted into a family where my father was my abuser. And I don't know what your experience is. I only know my story. And my story is that shit will take the wind out of your sails. And it takes a long time to recover from that stuff. There's a lot of insecurity that has developed and a lot of practices in my behavior that carried on through my young adult life. I got clean when I was 26 years old, man. Like, I'm not going to go into a big drug log, because is there anybody in here who knows how to get loaded successfully? Because if you do, put your damn hand down. And call your sponsor immediately. Is that man in here? You know, if you're new to Narcotics Anonymous, I want to say welcome. I want to say welcome, and whatever you're feeling in here, whatever you're feeling right now, like the confusion, the fear, what's next, you know, you're not alone. Look around. There's a whole lot of gratitude in this room, and I can feel it. There's a lot of love in this room. You know what I mean? And for some of us, that's real uncomfortable. Real uncomfortable because I didn't, man. You know what the most pivotal point in my recovery was that started me on this journey? It was a hug. This is why we hug in this fellowship. And I'm not judging you guys if you do the one arm side hug. You know what I mean? I don't, you know, if you want to shake a hand, I'm still going to hug you. You know? Because it was a hug that saved my life. You know, I walk in to my first meeting, and by way of our NA hotline, Thank you to our service members. Thank you to our trusted servants. And I called that hotline, and they led me to my first meeting. And I walked into that meeting with a bag full of leftover tater tots that my mom sent with me. And I had long hair, and she gave me, I had hair when I got here. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was 26 years old, and I got a supercuts haircut. You know what I mean? I don't know what it looked like. And I sat by the door because I didn't know what I was walking into, right? And this gentleman, he was given the GSR report, and granted, like, I'm new, I don't know what that is, and he's standing up and he's giving the report just like this. He looked very important, and I thought to myself, this must be the president of Narcotics Anonymous. So I went up to him, and, you know, whoever's holding the bag, right? I went up to him and I introduced myself to him, and I told him for the first time, I said, I'm an addict and I can't stop, you know? And he says, well, you know, you need to move, you should probably move into a recovery house. And so he introduced me to a couple of guys that own recovery houses. And for whatever reason, one of this gentleman that owned a recovery house, his name was Moses. Again, God rest his soul. You know, that's what happens around here. We stick around, we get old, and we pass. And a lot of us die clean, man. It happens. Addicts recover. There's a lot of time in this room. And Moses felt it really necessary, for whatever reason, to introduce me to Dale. And I'm just going to paint a picture. You know, I'm not a racist individual. Dale, to me, looked like he was bigger than life. He was 6 foot and change. He had a great big afro, and he was wearing a big puffy coat. That's all I remember. You know what I mean? Dale looked huge to me. Remember when you were a little kid, you ever go to like Dodger Stadium or something, you walk out for the first time, you see how big, that's how big Dale looked to me, you know? And he looked at me and said, hey man, how you doing? And he swallowed me up in this great big hug. And he's holding me. And he's holding me. And he's still holding me. And you ever get one of those hugs that's just a little too long? And maybe you start to question, right? And then he tells me, welcome home. And I felt the love of what he was saying. And he told me everything's gonna be okay. And I sobbed in this man's arms. I was just a little boy that needed a hug. It's the hug I had been looking for my whole life. I'd crawl up into my mom's lap and she'd be like, ah, get off me, you know? Get the straight arm. My dad was constantly beating my ass. And so that hug was the hug I was looking for. And I knew that I wanted to come back here, but I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I wish I could tell you I stayed for the whole meeting. I didn't. I'll tell you about the power of our readings. In our literature, I was leaving that meeting, and as I'm walking to the parking lot, to the car of the ride, that, by the way, it was the Connections old lady that gave me a ride there, and the whole ride up, she was telling me how Narcotics Anonymous didn't work. And as I'm walking back to the car to get a ride home, all I heard was, in my head was, alcohol is a drug, and everybody yelled, period, and in my head I went, and I didn't understand. But you guys told me, keep coming back. Don't leave before the miracle happens. Keep coming back. All these little things that you guys say as I get older in recovery, like the more I appreciate the simplicity of this program. And it was my predecessors that always taught me that the solution is always simple. The solution is always simple. The solution is always simple. It's not complicated. I'm the one that's complicated. I'm the only one that complicates shit around here. It's me. After working steps, I realized that I have the solution to everything. I have the roadmap. It's called 12 steps. I learned that self-pity was a part of the disease. It was not recovery. And that I had a choice, just like I had a choice to stay clean. Right? I picked my clean date. And I'll say this about that. January 12th, 1995. It was my first time, and I didn't find it necessary to go back out. I don't say that to brag. I say that to let you know that if you haven't relapsed, it doesn't have to be a part of your story. I also say that to say if you have relapsed, you don't have to hurt yourself anymore. Just for today. One day at a time. You know? There's so many 31 years of like experiences through working the steps, like walking through this process, and I'm reminded every time I walk into a meeting. No, that's not true. The base principle of the first step is honesty, right? And sometimes I say shit like I was just about to was dishonest. I'll give you an example. So you say, don't forget where you came from. Don't forget. Oh no, I never forget. But sometimes I forget where I come from. So one day I'm driving to work, right? Because now I've got my own little business. I work for myself, right? And I'm driving to work in my new truck, right? And I'm driving to work, and I get to work, and there's no parking in the front of my shop. And so I'm kind of bitchy about it, right? So I'm driving around. Okay, I find parking on the back side of the block. And in my head, I'm like fucking kind of. Now I gotta. I'm just in that mood, right? I'm not aligned. I'm not connected to my God. And what happens? It's like God just goes, remember this? I flash back to this one cat. He's the same age as me. In my head, his name was Jeff, but in my head, I called him Angry Jeff. And because Jeff was angry. And he kept coming in and out, and in and out, and in and out, and in and out. And I was like, man, bro, when are you going to get it, man? Can't you just stay? Like, call somebody, you know? And I cared about him, and he was in and out. One day he comes in, and he's got a bag on his foot, a grocery bag tied around his foot. And I said, what's up with the bag? He goes, oh, man, like it got injured, and it started smelling, so I didn't want to, like, smell it. So I tied him, like, bro, you need to hit the doctor, like, tomorrow, today, after the... We're at a hospital. I mean, this is the power of this disease when we let it get a hold of us, right? He relapsed again. He comes back. No foot. He's dead today. I wake up in my truck after remembering that, and I'm thinking, what are you complaining about? You just drove to your business in your new truck, and you're about to walk a block and a half with 2 feet. This is how my God works in my life. I'm sorry, I'm not paying attention to the time. I'm just rambling on. There's so many experiences. And I'll say this, the success of my recovery wasn't just that I just stayed. It was like a multitude of things. It was that combined with the work that I did do, the foundation that I do have, the people that I have in my life, and more importantly, my higher power's grace. I'll give you an example. Because through a great part of my recovery, I didn't believe I deserved shit. You know? And when I opened my business for the first 6 years, I was paranoid. I didn't want to go get the mail because I was going to get the letter that they're going to show up and they're going to take it. The responsibility police is going to knock on the door and, sorry, no, we can't do this. You're having way too much fun over here. And you got to come out with the rest of us, and you got to be miserable and go work with these gentlemen over here. And sorry, you can't do this anymore. I was so afraid. After 6 years, I realized that wasn't going to happen. But before I started that business, I talked about it, but it was all lip service. I was out of the side of my neck. And because I knew that required responsibility, the thing that I avoided my whole life. And this program and my higher power's direction in this situation, like, guided me into a place of leadership, which, by the way, allowed me to help to be more of service to this fellowship. You know, it allowed me to be more of an example. You know, so I'm recovery-based service, right, guys? Recovery-based service, principles, not personalities, right? Allowing a God-conscious group, allowing our higher power to come into the group before we have these conversations, when we're doing these things, so we can help keep our egos out of it. And I think this is such an important thing. I have ideas about all of that, but I won't go into that now. And so anyway, I'm walking by, the business I had worked for just shut down, and I'm heartbroken, like my girlfriend just broke up with me. And I'm walking by this building, and I see a big for rent sign. And again, I don't believe I can do any of this, but something said, and we all know what I mean when I hear, when I say something said, take a picture of that number. And I did, and I walked into this place, and I ordered my breakfast, and I'm looking at the number, and I heard in my head, suit up and show up, as I'm looking at the picture of this phone number. And I called the man, and he said, yeah, I'll show you the place tomorrow. And I said, great, and I hung up, and I went, shit. I dress up, you know. And I'm kind of heavily tattooed, but whatever. And I walk in and I meet the guy, and as soon as he opens the door, the hamster's on the wheel, and it's telling me all the ways that I'm not going to succeed at this, all the ways that this isn't going to work. It tells me I don't belong here. What are you doing here? Like, look at this place. There's half a floor. The drywall's all tore up. You know how much work this is going to take? This is construction. You don't know how to do this. Do you know anybody to do this? Can you afford to do this? Nobody's going to want to work for you. It's going on and on and on. This gentleman is walking me through the whole place, and he's talking, and I don't hear anything he's saying. Nothing. Nothing. I'm going to tell you how my God works in my life. As he's walking me through the, and he works, walks me through the shop into the basement, he explains that there's no exit directly to the alley in case of a fire, but there is a side door that leads to a storage room for the living areas above. Above my business is a bunch of like apartments. And he says, if you exit into that storage area, there's an exit as you go straight through there to the street. And I said, can I look in there? And he goes, yeah, you can look in there. And as I'm going to open the door, my head's still telling me all the ways that I can't do this. And I open the door, and when I look in that room with a storage area in there, is a circle of chairs. And on the wall were the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. And my fear vanished. And I still challenged my higher power. I turned around and I looked at him and I said, I don't have any credit. And he goes, and he said, I don't care, just pay your rent. And that was 14 years ago. And it's not about the outside stuff. It sounds like a stuff about the outside story, but it's about my higher power and how my God was so patient, showing me over and over and over again that he was present in my life. You know, because when I sat, I when I first moved in that recovery house, is Rick P. in the room? Rick P. gave me my first basic tip. And he said, I can tell that you want this, so I'm going to let you borrow my book until you get yours. And I was reading through that book, and I don't remember, I brain fart a lot on the literature, so I don't even try to quote it. I realized reading that book that I didn't have to hurt myself anymore. And I shook my fist at the sky and I challenged my God. I said, I did all the stuff. I did all the things. I go, now you're going to have to show me something. And he showed me again and again and again and again and again. You see, so it wasn't just one thing. It wasn't just going to meetings. It wasn't just being of service. It wasn't just sponsoring other. It wasn't just working the steps, the traditions, and the concepts. It wasn't just showing up and being present. It was a combination of these things. And when we say, you get out of this what you put into it, that's what we mean. You get out of it what you put into it. And what this has done for me is allowed me to find this fire for life. When they say more will be revealed, and then when they say beyond your wildest dreams, like beyond my wildest dreams has nothing to do with outside stuff. You could strip it all away. Because the faith I have in my God today is greater than anything. Greater than I ever imagined it would be. And it's because he was patient enough for me. So when I find myself being impatient with you guys, I'm reminded, why can't I just practice a little compassion? And by the way, for those of you that don't know, how we treat others is an outward expression of how we treat ourselves. So when you see that addict that's being all judgmental and shit, you know what I mean? Have a little compassion. Because that's how that individual treats himself. This is an inside job and there's no way around it. You can find, I'm not going to say I never sought the distraction. I'll say that these days the distraction is a lot less. And having that little business has allowed me to grow in such a way. It forced me to be more responsible. And I'm starting to understand why. It forced me to, like the fourth concept, right? Talks about when we're voting in people into leadership positions. We're all trusted servants, we're all equal, but we can agree that some positions require a little bit more, right? And so it's not a popularity contest, right? Like, it's for the good of the group or the area or just Narcotics Anonymous in general, right? And so as I'm reading down the list and it's talking, it's giving examples of those characteristics, it gives me the opportunity to go, oh, I got that. I think I do that. That one could use some work. You know what I mean? It allows me to look at myself, like, honestly. It allows me, it gives me the ability to be able to, well, it makes me humble is what it does. Puts me right back into that space. You know, surrender isn't just a first step thing. It isn't just something we do when we're new. Like, every time I go through something new, like, I feel like I'm a newcomer all over again. You know? It's a little bit different now. I think I have a little more faith than I do, so I'm not as overwhelmed. But I can still get overwhelmed. And sometimes life will blindside you, and it doesn't matter how much time you have around here. It doesn't matter how strong you think your roots are. Like, you will get swayed, I promise you. As one of my predecessors says, everyone gets a turn in the barrel. You know? And I'm so grateful. How much time do I have?
12 minutes.
Hmm? 12 minutes, okay. Recently, I got on this trip recently, like, I caught myself complaining at work about something, and it's like, why don't they make something that does this? And I was like, thought about it, I'm like, why are you complaining about it? Why don't you just make one? Right? And then I'm like, why don't people deliver supplies to my shop? They're going to all these other shops. And I'm like, does that mean I got to start another business? The answer is yes. So again, this is the guy that avoided responsibility. And you know what? And I might, and I'm taking it a little bit bigger. I'm putting myself all the way out into that place where I'd normally be crapping my pants. And now I'm not afraid to fail. I think this is what it is, and that's what this fellowship got me. Because we learn, like, you know, in the first step we get to surrender, we also learn about honesty. But I also know that there's a great deal of hope in this room, because if you're sitting in this room and you don't have any faith for whatever you're going through and you're dealing with fear, because it's a very human thing to experience, I know that you have hope. And the reason I know that you have hope is because you're sitting in this room. It means you're not willing to leave yet, right? And so what I've learned that nobody ever really explained to me until this one sponsee came into my life. He dropped this one little thing and off he went, and I never saw him again. And he said to me, courage, step four, courage is not the absence of fear, but fear being present and making the decision to walk through it. To me, that, like, I don't know how to verbalize everything. When I got here, I was very introverted. I didn't know how to use my words. I didn't know that you tell me alcohol was a drug and I didn't get it. I found my voice in Narcotics Anonymous, listening to like 15-year-old speakers that blew my mind. And it helped me find my voice. And so I kept coming back and I kept coming back, and my predecessors scooped me up, because God blessed my predecessors forever. And they took me to a meeting in San Diego, and the main speaker was Steve T, and I felt like he was talking to me. He says, "For all you addict alcoholics," and my ears perked up, because I didn't get it, right? Why? Because I really just wanted to have a beer. Yeah, maybe not just one. And he says, "I was new and I had just taken 30 days and I was so proud, and my sponsor showed up and I'm sitting next to my sponsor and they called for 30 days and he goes, Steve says, "I got up and I took my chip," and he says, "My name's Steve and I'm an addict alcoholic." And he walked back down, he proudly sat next to his sponsor, and his sponsor leans away and he says, "Addict alcoholic, that's like saying you're addicted to fruit and apples." Steve goes on to explain that if you take the contents out of a bottle of alcohol, within it is something called ethyl alcohol. You remove the liquid content from ethyl alcohol, what you are left with is ether. He's like, "So all you alcoholics are really just a bunch of ether dope fiends." And I knew in that moment that I could never drink again. I'd known. In that moment, he freed me from that. Just like Dale freed me with that hug. Just like the multiple experiences that I've had with you gentlemen, just in walking in this room and fellowshipping with people I've never met before, hugging them, the miracle that happens on a regular basis in this fellowship when we allow it, we allow my heart to open up to yours. But that doesn't happen until we reach a certain point of healing. And that healing resides in steps. Step work is an inside job. My goal is to continue to work so I can continue to be the absolute most authentic version of me, so I can be the best for everybody around me. My purpose is to be of service. And I never thought that would be one of the things that made me the happiest. I thought I didn't like people when I got here. I found out I didn't like me. And then I fixed that My whole life I was looking for somebody to look up to, and one day I looked in the mirror and I realized I had become the person that I wanted to look up to. So there's a constant gratitude within my heart when I allow it, when I stay out of the way. It's not complicated. It's simple. Done? 5 minutes? Damn, you guys are... You're not going to give this guy any time to say anything. I want to hear Roy now. Gentlemen, thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing another day clean with me. It's been such an honor.
I'm an addict, my name's Andrew. Yeah, I was a little nervous when I got up here, but I'd like to thank Daniel for the opportunity to come up here and participate in my meeting. I know it's an honor and a privilege to lead a meeting, whether there's two people or, you know, this size room. And right now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Roy B. from San Diego.
My name is Roy, and I am an addict. And it feels good. I was going to step up there like these youngsters, but I was like, man, I cannot bust my ass trying to get up there like that. Them days is long gone, you know what I'm saying? Today's a good day to be clean, man. You know, I don't know a whole bunch about, you know, what to say and all that kind of stuff, but I know that... I'm truly grateful to be clean. And probably the most important thing I'm going to tell you guys, man, is that I got clean on October the 1st of 1992. And that was also the day I got out of prison, you know. And I had clean time when I was locked up, but I didn't think I was going to be able to stay clean, man. Nothing had ever worked for me. You know, nothing had ever got, you know, and I got one of them jail stories, in and out, all that kind of stuff, man. And, you know, I'm so grateful for the program. But before I get started, man, I always, always like to read November the 12th just for today. And it's coming out of the basic text, page 98, and it says, when we honestly tell our own story, someone else may identify with us. And I'm going to skip down all the way to the last paragraph is, I will remember that my honest story is what I shared the best, and today that's enough. And they didn't ask me to get up here and preach to you guys or teach to you guys. They just asked me to get up here and share my experience, my strength, and my hope, man. And I'm born and raised in San Diego, man. You know, we were raised by my mother. My mother was a saint, man. She was a strong black woman that believed in prayer, man. She didn't even believe in a lot of stuff that we talk about here, man. She didn't think she was powerless, man. We were her kids, and there was 10 of us, right? And my mother was the type of mother, she made all my court dates, you know. She put money on my books, you know. She came to see me, she took the kids to see me, man. And I always pay homage to my mom, man, because you know, I don't know, you know, probably my finest hour in Narcotics Anonymous was I had 8 months clean when my mother died. And it's not like I got some heroic story to tell you or some spiritual that I did, but I was there. And this is a cold disease, right? This is a cold disease. My brother, he was still out there, man. And I remember when the procession was going, right? And I'm got 8 months clean. I'm barely getting my feet wet. And my sister and them want to take the funeral procession down by the spot to try to see if we could find my brother. You know, that was important to them. And I just said no. And that was one of the first times where I learned how to speak up, man. You know, and they listened, no, we're going to go and bury mama and do the right thing, man. And so I'm not from the projects, man. I don't got one of them stories, you know. I had a mother, and my dad was a hard-working man. He showed me what it was like, but all my life, man, and I might be the only one in here, but I've always felt awkward, man. I was never comfortable, you know what I'm saying, in my own skin and stuff. And so when it came time to use, I used, man, and I liked it. And I don't care what it is, if I like it, I'll do it again. And I got caught up in that whole thing, man. I went to the youth authorities when I was 14, you know, and I put that mask on, right? Like, this is a men's meeting. I put that mask on. I'm a tough guy, don't nothing bother me, all of this shit. And I'm going in and out, man. And I went to prison. I did all of this stuff, man. You know, never knowing about Narcotics Anonymous or anything like this, man. You know, and I got out one time, man. And my parole officer, he called me Easy Money. And he said, Easy Money, I'm gonna get you a job, right? And he did. He got me a job at a local cable company. And this was like in the early 80s, right? And so when I progressed in that job, I became a linesman, a maintenance tech. I got off parole, I got a woman, we got a place, you know, I started getting some stuff. And I was, at that time, I was smoking weed and drinking, doing a little cocaine and syrup. And that was clean, you know what I'm saying? But what happened was, back when where I came from, you know, the only thing that was off limits was like if you was shooting dope. You know, everything else, if you was doing cocaine, you wasn't no crackhead, you was a player. You know what I'm saying? You know, I was a little ways back, but that was the truth, right? And so I'm working, man, my family's proud of me, everybody is proud of me, man. But, you know, I have a kid, you know, we doing our thing, and something called rock cocaine came out. And all hell is breaking loose in the neighborhood, right? So I say, I want to get some of this money, right? So that's what I did, you know. And I was working off a pager, and you couldn't call me after 10. I'm putting some rules to the game, right? But what happened was, I did halfway okay, but the more money I made, the more my drug use escalated. And I prided myself on this job. I was employee of the month. I won employee of the year. I was doing good. They loved me. And so I'm snorting the cocaine, and then somebody told me, say, man, if you mix a little heroin with the cocaine, it'll knock the edge up off of it. And I said, you know, that sounds about right, you know? And I started snorting the heroin, and then I started shooting it, and I'm trading at my job. I prided myself. This job meant everything to me, you know? And I said I would never get high at the job, and so it was right after I got, and then it was at lunchtime, and then it was like right when I pulled out of the parking lot, I'm fading, I'm using, you know? And I woke up one day, man, and I diagnosed myself, man, right? I said, this job is getting in the way of my hustle. You know what I'm saying? And I quit my job, right? You know, and everybody is like looking at me like, what the, you know what I'm saying? And it wasn't, I don't even think it was like 4 or 5 months later, man, I had a 10-year, 8-month sentence. And I had knocked myself out the box again, right? And I did all the time with a resentment. I didn't know that's what I had, but I had a little taste of what it was like, right? I wasn't clean, but I had a job, I had an apartment, I had, you know, I had some stuff, you know? And so I swore when I got out, I was gonna go back to where I was. And I didn't tell you guys, but I have 6 sisters and I had 3 brothers. And my sisters, everybody's happy, I'm coming home, they're gonna give me this big party, right? And so I get there and I'm nervous. I told my homeboys, and where I come from, the era that I came out of, when you got out, if they put you up, that was a sign of respect. Get you a car, get you some clothes, get you, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't like to turn you into a monster or nothing. It was like, but I didn't know I was an addict. And so I get to the party and the women is out there. That's when we had weights and I'm on swole. And they like, look, we gonna do this or what? But I'm nervous, right? And I tell my buddy, I said, give me a toot, man. I just want to get the edge up off of me, you know? And he did. And this is a cold disease, right? So what happened was my mom was a diabetic. And I swear I did not plan this. So my professor said, come see me Monday. I'm going to give you the weekend. I got out on a Friday. He said, I'm going to give you the weekend. And when I went to see him Monday, I had an outfit in the car. I snuck one of my mom's outfit. And psychologically, in my mind, I said I was going to do one speedball, and then I was going to get a job. You know what I'm saying? And I turned that beast loose, man. And this is a cold disease, man. It's not a respecter of your morals and your values or nothing, man. And I'm using, man, and I just did a good joke, man, and I can't stop, and I'm so ashamed. Everybody, the family's disappointed, you know, and it's not like I'm a pimp or a player. I don't have a good, like, hustling story. All I got is a caveman move out there, you know what I'm saying? And so I picked up a pistol, and me and the guys that we were with, and I caught a case, man. I wasn't even out 9 months. And I catch the case, it's an ex-con with a gun. And I said, you know what? If I could get him down to 5 years, I'm gonna take it. And I'm gonna do it like a man. And I went to the little deal thing, and the guy comes, he says, hey, he says, I've got some good news for you. I can get you 2 years. And I said, can you send him to me today? And he said, yes. And they sentenced me 2 years. I knew I had a year with no half from my parole officer. And I went down to Donovan when I was in jail. One of my homeboys, he had a little something. He sent me to Donovan. And that was the last place I used. Donovan, 4 yard, building 18. And I used, and I was just sick of the whole fucked up game, man. I had been on that grind for a long time, man. I didn't know I was gonna stay stopped. I didn't. No, none of that, man. So I sold what I could, and I went from the 4 yard to the 3 yard to the 5 yard. And when I got to the 5 yard, I saw this guy, and he was dressed up. I thought he was going on a visit. And I said, hey, where you going on a visit? He said, no, man, I'm in this program. It's called Say No to Drugs. And they take you out and speak to youths and go to juvenile hall and church groups and all of this stuff. And then he put the top on it, right? He says, and they take you to McDonald's and Burger King. I was like, how you sign up for that? You know what I'm saying? And it sounded like a silly program, but it was true. But here's the blessing, right? In California, they started getting help for us. It was called the P3 program, the Parolee Partnership Program. And San Diego had the pilot program. So we went out, and we did. They went out and spoke to the youths and, you know, told them. But the treatment programs came in to us, and they started saying, hey, well, this is with so-and-so, and we're, you know, and you could get, and they told us, they says, hey, you know, we'll pay for you. You know, instead of just giving you $200 gate money, they says, hey, you know what, here, we'll pick you up and we'll take you. And so I said, you know, I'm listening, and this white guy came in, and he had a lot of war paint on him, and but he was talking about something called Narcotics Anonymous, man. You know, and he was a really, really gifted speaker, man. He had the ability to stand up in front of us, like up here, you know, like people think this shit is easy getting up here and shit. The truth is, you ain't got but about 5 minutes to get your ass up here and start talking about something, or we're going to find some other shit to do. You know what I'm saying? But he was a gifted speaker, and he could make eye contact with you. And he talked about, you know, something called a sponsor, and rebuilding his life, and being a productive member of society. He talked about all the things that I would just lay on my bunk and dream about, man. Being a good dad and stuff like that. And He said he went to something called meetings, man. And so I'm in this program, but I'm in the black section, right? We're in this treatment program, but it was still, you know, it was a minimum yard, but we was playing like we was tough and hardcore and shit, you know. And so I didn't go up to hug him or nothing, but I remember what he said. He touched my spirit with what he was talking about, right? And that was my any limps, man, for me. Was I started going to meetings when I was in jail. Somebody gave me a basic text, and I tucked the basic text in my waist, man, because I was embarrassed, man. I was embarrassed to tell my homeboys that I wanted out, man, that I was trying to save my life, man. And this is how sick I was in the game, right? You know, and I started going to these meetings, and H&I came in. And if you do H&I, good for you, man. That's why I started really hearing the message, right? These guys came in on Monday nights. I'll never forget, because back then, Monday night football was really popular, right? And in my mind, I'm like, why would you come in on Monday night football, you know? But they did, and they came in 7 o'clock, and they talked about Narcotics Anonymous, man. You know, they talked about the things we talked about. And this program, this P3 program, so they told us, they says, hey, you can, whatever you want to do, whatever program, we'll pay for it. And they gave us this list. And I looked on the list, and right on this list, there was a treatment program on Euclid and Imperial. My mama stayed 10 minutes from there. So I knew when I got out, I was going to Euclid and Imperial. And so I just called the house, and they had them do drive-bys and try to figure out what it was going to look like and everything. And again, I get out on Friday. And again, my prof says, hey, we want you to check in, but don't come see me till Monday. This time, though, I followed direction. And I went, it was a Friday, I'm doing my intake. You know, and it's women, right? It's mixed meeting. So I'm looking, the crowd starts gathering, and the young lady that was doing the intake with me, I can't even concentrate because I'm looking through the window at you guys, y'all, all the, you know. And she said, you want to go in there? And I said, yeah. You know, and she said, okay. I didn't know that she liked meetings too, you know. And I went in there Friday, 12 o'clock noon, man. And I found you guys, man. I found my tribe, man. I looked all over for you guys, man. I went down alleys. I went in penitentiaries. I went to some shiesty, shady spots, man. And there you were, 10 minutes from my mama's house. And I started going to meetings, man. I'm in treatment. Every day we break, 12 o'clock, they had these NA meetings. And in there, man, they was talking about it. They was talking about the true and the difficult things, and I just fell in love with Narcotics Anonymous, right? I'm a guy that I didn't take no welcome tokens. I didn't take no 30-day tokens, and I didn't take no 60-day tokens. And I believe I was just a little more scared of you guys than I was of the disease. You know what I'm saying? And I got my ass kicked out there. You know, my last time when I came in here, it wasn't my worst. I had been in worse shape. You know what I'm saying? But the spiritual malady of this disease was, man, it was killing me, man. You know, I had had enough, and I didn't know it. And I walked in the meeting, and this one chick, I'll never forget, man. I'll never forget this, man. She said, and she said it loud, and she said it proud. She said, I'm lonely. And all my life, man, I had never heard anybody say that. That's how I felt. I don't know a lot about the disease of addiction. I don't know what page to tell you to turn to that's gonna make you feel better, but I believe this with all my heart. The disease of addiction wants to isolate me from you. The very people who saved my life, right? And when she said that, I was like, wow, man. That's how I felt, man. You know? And I started having this love affair with Narcotics Anonymous. The honesty. They was getting honest up in there, man. They wasn't beating around the bush, and you know what I'm saying? They was talking about the disease of addiction, man. And I loved hearing that kind of shit, man. It gave me some hope, man. you know. And I started coming to meetings. I'm enjoying. We'd pool our money to get something to eat. The members in my treatment program, and we come in there, man. And I just thought, you know, one day I'm gonna be able to tell them how I really feel. You know, one day I'm gonna be able to get honest and talk about my life, man, and what's going on with me. And thank God I've been a follower all my life, man. And being a follower finally started paying off, because I asked this guy to sponsor me. Because back then they'd ask, you got a sponsor, what step you on? And so I dropped his name. He was real popular and he could share real good. You know what I'm saying? I'm in there, you know, so-and-so is my sponsor. But I wasn't gonna do no work. I knew what I needed to do, man. And I really, you know, when I say this, you know, people laugh and shit, but I needed to get me a job, get off parole, and get me a woman with Section 8. And I was gonna be cool. You know what I'm saying? You know, and that was the extent of my, you know, my hustle and shit, right? I was like, I ain't paying for shit, you know? And, I kept coming back, right? I kept coming back, and I got on October the 1st, January the 4th, I got a job. And I got a job, and I remember catching the bus in the rain. You know, if you knew or you knew her, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes you got to roll up your sleeves, man. And I had to catch the bus in the rain to get to the job and stuff. I didn't have a car. My family wanted to help me, but my past experience has shown them that I wasn't to be trusted, man. You know what I'm saying? So if I asked for like $10, so what you need $10 for? You know what I'm saying? You know. And I started working, man, and just feeling better about myself, man. And I'm in this thing, man. I'm having this love affair with NA, man. I'm listening to you guys. I see you guys. You know, everything is going good for me, man. You know, I started working the steps because I'm staying with my daughter's mom, and she still uses. But she was smoking weed and drinking, and for me, that was... You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like shooting dope, but anyway, you know. And but I'm going to meetings and she doing her thing. And we like two ships passing in the night. And this is really how I started working the steps, man. And so one day, it was domestic violence. We didn't even call it domestic violence. It just started off, fuck you, you know. And we just go from there, you know what I'm saying? You know how that shit go, you know? And so I called this guy that I had asked to sponsor me. She called my pro officer, she called my mom, her, everybody tell them all, you know, and my pro officer came to my house and she says, hey, look, you're doing good. We're testing you, you're testing clean. But if you do this again, if I gotta come out here again, she said, I'm gonna violate you. You going back to prison, clean, but not in recovery. And I called this guy up and I told him, I said, hey man, this B, you know, this is what's going on. And he told me something that's true to this day. He says, hey, this is a participation program. And what you put into it is what you're gonna get out. And if you don't put nothing in, you ain't gonna get nothing out. And he was nice enough to take me through 12 steps, man. And I got better just as a person, man. You know, I couldn't believe it, man. I just got better. You know, it's a little, you know, getting honest and, you know, talk about the true and the difficult stuff, man. I got it. My first service commitment was the coffee maker at a Saturday noon meeting, man. I was a coffee, and I was Big Roy. When I got here, I ain't making no coffee, you know. But I enjoyed the commitment. You know what I'm saying? And I'm growing, man. I'm doing my thing, man. And about 5 years clean, I meet her, right? I saw her, but she was one of the prissy girls, right? So I look at her like, damn, how much clean time you need to talk to her, you know? But I said, hey, and she said, hey. And you know, around here, that's all it takes, you know what I'm saying? Beautiful sister, man. Beautiful, educated, pretty, beautiful, everything, man, everything that I could want, right? And we got married, man, big, beautiful wedding, hundreds of people and everything, but the bottom line is I wasn't ready to be married, you know? And it was, you know, I mean, I wish I could have some valid reason why I was doing what I was doing, but the truth of the matter was I wasn't there yet. But she was nice, looked good on my arm, and you know what I'm saying? And we got married, man, and my job, I'm progressing. I got on the door at my work, it said, Mr. Roy Bowman, I got a secretary, I'm hiring people, but I take my finger off my post, right? I take my finger off my post, clean, but not in recovery. And I start exhibiting a lot of addict behaviors, man, and my job calls me in, you know, and they says, you gotta go. And I was so hurt, a lot of my identity was in that job, man. And I was like, well, you know, I'm Big Roy, everybody loves me, you know what I'm saying? They're like, you gotta go, you know. And my wife, she told me, she said, you done fucked over me for the last time. And she packed her shit up and left me, man. And this big ass, beautiful, we had moved out. That was when you get bigger, better, more. We had a big premium life, a big, you know what I'm saying? All the to-do, man. And but it was frosty up in there, man. And, you know, and so I was like, man, and I was in the worst place that an addict could be, man. Every now and then you get a chance to see what you're really working with, right? You know, not all the time, but every now and then, man, and the process I've had, you know, to roll up my sleeves, man, see if I could take a punch or not. You know, it's nice being up here and talking and stuff like that, but my buddy Rudy would say, he was one of the predecessors of San Diego, he said, everybody get a chance to walk with those tight ass shoes on. You know what I'm saying? And there I was, man. And but to the untrained eye, you couldn't really tell. I was trying to cover it up, man. I was trying to cover up all the pain and the hurt. I was in a new Cadillac truck. So to the untrained eye, I looked normal. You know, it's just like us. People come by here, we look normal. We look like there ain't nothing wrong with us. You know what I'm saying? You know, I'm talking about sick as the day is long. You know what I mean? And so I pull up in this gas station, man, and I started crying, man. I cried for all the times I hadn't cried, man. And I mean, this is since I was a kid. I heard Tony, what he was saying, I'm not a crier. You know, I'd be holding it in, just, you know what I'm saying? And I started crying, man, and people was looking at me, man, but my life, you know, if you ever, like, you got 10, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40 years, and you think when you hit that plateau that you're gonna be at a certain spot, and there I was with clean time, and I wasn't there. And my whole life, as I knew it was changing, man, and I had a moment of clarity, man, and I moved back to San Diego. I moved back to San Diego, and, I had to come, my home group is a Keep It Real group. We meet Friday nights at 6 o'clock, man. And we don't always do it, but we try to keep it real. And I had to walk back into that meeting and raise my hand and say, you know what, my name's Roy and I'm an addict and this is what's really going on. Not what I want you to think is going on, not what I'm projecting and all this. I couldn't, the gold chains and the car, they couldn't cover it up. I was damaged goods, man, you know. And that was the best thing that I could have done, man, is move back to San Diego, man. You know, I had to try to pull my nuts out the sand one more time, man. And I moved back and you guys nursed me to health, man. But some people stood in judgment of me. You know, Mikhail, I told Mikhail, I was like, man, these motherfuckers, they talking about me. And he was like, if you don't want them to talk, maybe you need to quit doing some of the shit you're doing. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, and I was like, you know what? I'm getting another sponsor. Oh, no, man. You know what I'm saying? You know. And, but I came back, man, and I got into the process. You know, the step work, getting honest, talking about it. You guys nursed me back to health, man. And it's been an incredible, incredible experience being clean, man. You know, I found that I could take a punch, man. You know, and about me and the wife got divorced. 9 years married, 9 years divorced, and about 5 years ago, she was at a function and fell and broke her left leg right on. Right? And so I was just out of care and concern. I thought that it was over. You know, I had to humble myself and see her. Matter of fact, here, it was the first time I seen her with somebody else, right? And my feelings was hurt and shit, but I'm putting on the brave face. You know how you gotta do when she with him, you know? And anyway, it was at her mom's house. So I was just coming because I knew, you know, you break your leg and your arm, they're gonna give you something, you know? So I'm like, how you doing with the medication? And we just started talking and stuff. And I didn't think nothing of it. It was just, you know, out of care and concern. And then we kept going and started going to meetings and stuff. And I'm like, what is this, you know? And I'm trying to figure it out, man. But anyway, the bottom line, we've been back together for 5 years now, you know? Yeah. So when you see her in the hallway, do that same seal clap, you know? And it's been, you know, if it don't get no better than it is, you know, that was amends that I had. I'm grateful that I could make because, you know, she didn't deserve what she got from me. It was really traumatic. Some of the people from San Diego and Greater LA, you know, you guys know what happened. But it was like, you know, I fucked over her in a way that I'm not proud of. But it was, you know, it is what it is. And so we've been back together and I actually wear this ring. She got me this ring, but we're not married. But I feel more comfortable with her today than when we were married. You know what I'm saying? And it's a trip how that whole thing goes, man. And it's given me an opportunity to process her. And it's still, you know, it can be, you know what I'm saying? Because there's still some hurt and pain and shit and that won't never go away, I don't think. But anyway, man, and it's been an incredible journey, just rebuilding my life. I'm gonna close with this story, man. I had some other stuff, but it's my Russia story, right? And I got an invitation to share in Russia.
Yeah.
My man Roland was there, and they don't see too many brothers out there, right? And they was, you know, I was like, damn, you know. And so this one chick, she was all on me, man. Just like, man, you know. And when I went out there, right, so I said, you know what? I took my basic text, my Bible, and my Viagra. I didn't know what was gonna happen, man. I didn't know what was gonna happen, right? You know? I'm betting across the board, right? And so I'm there. And the fellowship, they loved this man. They did all of this stuff. And so this one chick, and so we went on the subway. So it was 5 stops, I counted, right? And then the fellowship embraced us. They embraced me and they would take me and they just smother you. They want to talk about the steps, about the process of recovery. They're real, you know, and they got a full-blown fellowship. I thought we was going to come and just have to hand feed them. No, they got schedules and books and all kinds of stuff. So anyway, I'm going back, and so they just smother you. So the Sunday, I said, I want to see if I could catch the trolley by myself, right? And so I said, okay. So I kind of snuck away. It was an old sports arena or something. It's called the Drusba. And you walk to the subway, and as I'm walking, there's this chick. She got on a blue dress. And I'm like, oh shit. But as I got closer to her, she was crying. Right? And so I'm like, wow. You know, like, you know. And she comes up and she gives me a hug. And she, like, and hand signals, like, the convention's getting ready to be over. And I guess she was going back where it was some domestic violence. Right? And she didn't want to go home. Well, I knew the host hotel was called the Salute. And so I said, well, you know, just kind of hand signal, I'm going on the trolley. And so she grabs my arm, and so we're walking like we're a couple, right? And so we get on the trolley, we're sitting down, and she's just brushing up against me, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be a hell of a men's meeting story here, you know? And so one stop, two stop, three stops, and by the third stop, something happened to me. I started having compassion. It wasn't about me getting my jollies off. It was another recovering addict that was in pain. And so the fifth stop, we get off, and there's like a 5-10 minute walk to it, and she's still brushing up against me, right? And so my head is running. And so they have a information that they had for all the out-of-towners and stuff to help you with whatever you got going on, and they would man it with English speakers and stuff. And so we're walking up, and I went over to the young lady who had asked me to see, and I told her, you know, hey, this, you know, she's in a little pain, she got something going on, so they swooped her up, right? And I felt good. And then the next day, so she was, you know, thanking me, and the young lady that was doing service thanked me. And so the next day, she comes in, and she's got on a summer dress, and she comes, runs up, and gives me a hug, and I think, me, spiritual as I am, I'm like, man, I should have hit that. You know what I'm saying? But it was like, you know, it happens. You know, and the bottom line is I could think whatever I want to think. You know what I'm saying? But my action spoke for me, you know, and it's all about every now and then I'll get a chance to see where my program is, right? Every now and then. Not every day, not all the time. You know, I know how to do the superficial talk and stuff like that, but every now and then I'll get a chance to see what step I'm on. You know what I'm saying? My sponsor, I was just, you know, I was kind of stagnant in my recovery, and I changed sponsors, right? I'm on step 3 now, right? And that's a big, big deal for me to get back to the basics, right? And, you know, it's been a challenge, man. You know, it's been a challenge. I got 33 years clean, man. I've been through some wars. I've been through all of that stuff. You know what I'm saying? But here's the thing is that I want to stay involved in the process, man. You know, I believe in Narcotics Anonymous, man. I love this program, you know, and it's not like I wave a basic text, but if you ask me, I'll tell you how I was able to stay clean. If you look up the definition of service, the one that I like, the one that I think speaks to all of us, especially Chris and all you guys that are being a service, it says service is work that's done by one person that benefits another, you know. And I hope in some small way that I've been a service here. Thanks for letting me share.
Let's thank both of our speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Okay. I've asked Max to come up and read. Still a meeting going on, guys. Still a meeting going on. I've asked Max to come up and read just for today. Okay.
Max Addict, just for today, tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability.